We up here are getting back to our series that we've been going through this summer, walking through the book of Proverbs, theme by theme here, and we are learning how to foolproof our lives, how to live lives in a way that we stop wreaking havoc and making problems for ourselves, but we live our lives the way that God desires for us. And today we are tackling a topic that applies to every single one of you. And that is how to have a proper view of money. Because we all have money. Some of you have a lot. Some of you have a little. Some of you maybe have a couple coins in your pocket you can rub together and that's it. But we live in a society where you simply cannot really function without managing money, managing wealth, working to earn something and using what you earn to barter or trade or pay for something that you want or something that you need. For all the millennia that humanity has lived, there has been an exchange system. There has been a form of wealth, a form of riches. It wasn't always the U.S. dollar, but everybody has dealt with some form of money in their lives. And so as a result, it makes a lot of sense that in the book of Proverbs, as a father is trying to pass down his wisdom to his son, it talks a lot about money. Dads in the room who have raised teens and 20-somethings through that stage of life, I'm hoping that you talked about money a lot because kids at that age are foolish. I've talked about trucks so many times with teenagers in the youth group because that's where they want all their money to go. I'm not pointing at anybody. Right? Everybody's got their thing. We all have our heart that leads us to use our money sometimes in foolish ways. And the problem is, if you don't figure it out, you make your life a lot harder than it needs to be. God doesn't want that for anybody. Solomon didn't want that for his son as he was recording Proverbs. And so as a result, he wrote a lot about how to use wealth and riches and money for good, not for evil. For blessing of other people and not just, you know, for himself. And so that is what we are going to be talking about today. Within Christianity, there's really two extreme views of money that we are going to try to avoid. I was raised in a Christian home, and for a period of time while I was in high school, my parents got invited to a Bible study. They're very excited about this new Bible study because they were learning some stuff they'd never learned before. They were watching Kenneth Copeland videos. Name it and claim it. You just say, God, I need this, and then he's going to give it to you. Kenneth Copeland would teach, literally, if you don't have a new car, it's because you didn't ask. But every Christian should have a new car. Every Christian should be rich. He doesn't have just one private jet. He has multiple private jets. And he would say, it's because he asked. And this is the belief that essentially God wants everybody to be wealthy. He wants you to be rich and you to be rich and you to be rich. And this is called prosperity theology. And when these preachers like Benny Hinn and I said Kenneth Copeland, Joel Osteen, there's a bunch of them. They have big smiley faces and books and TV shows. Their ministries are on TV. But they all fall into this prosperity theology. And they have verses. Abraham, the father of the Israelites, you know, the original person who made the whole family of Israel, he was very, very wealthy. Job, who we were talking about in Sunday school, was very, very wealthy. Jesus said, ask for anything in my name, and I will give it to you. And taken out of context, that means ask for that new truck, and God has to give it to you. So they use their verses out of context, and they build this prosperity theology that when it comes to money, every Christian should be rich, and if you're not, it's because you don't have enough faith. Meanwhile, I've also wrestled with the other end of the extreme, and that is this belief that God wants everyone to be poor. This kind of comes from, if you think about the monks in the Middle Ages, they lived with virtually no possessions. They had no money, they had no wealth, This word austerity means to live with essentially nothing, the simplest, plainest of lifestyles. And there have been moments in my life where, you know, Michelle and I make money and we have money. And then we're like, you hear like kids are starving in Africa. It's always kids starving in Africa. And so it's like, well, should I buy the used car or should I ride a bike and give all the extra money to the kids who are starving in Africa? You know, have you felt that before? This pressure that no matter what you spend on yourself, you're being too comfortable, you're being a greedy American, and all your money should be going to those in need. And that's kind of this other end of the extreme. But what we see in Proverbs is that neither of these extremes are accurate. This isn't where God wants us. Solomon puts a ton of Bible verses in the book of Proverbs to show us how to manage and handle our money. And there's a lot of verses because there's a lot of nuance here. We want to find a balanced account of when it comes to our view of money. We want to have a proper view of money, and that means not living to one extreme of we should all be rich, or the other extreme of anytime you spend any money on yourself, you should feel guilty for it. You should live a monk-like existence. We should live somewhere in the middle with wisdom, with diligence, with generosity. And so that's what we're going to talk about today, going through the book of Proverbs. There are 10 principles that we're going to walk through today with verses for all of them. I will make these notes available on the internet. I know sometimes people ask for it so that they don't have to scribble everything down. You can find that on our website. But the first point is wealth and poverty each bring unique temptations. Sometimes the wealthy, sometimes those who are poor are like, man, I wish I was rich. Life would be so much easier if I was rich. Meanwhile, the rich sometimes have so many extra things on their plate because of their resources, so many extra things that they've purchased that need to be maintained, so many different people trying to get at their money. They have to hire attorneys and lawyers and people who do their taxes who cost a ton of money. And they're like, sometimes I wish that my life was simpler and I didn't have all this money. We actually find out that living on either of these extremes is challenging. And that's what we see in the prayer in Proverbs chapter 30, verse 7 through 9. There's actually a kind of an interesting line in the middle of this prayer. Maybe you've heard. It says, give me neither poverty nor riches. It's this idea that it's easier to live in the middle. So Proverbs 30, verse 7 through 9 says, two things I ask of you, Lord. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep falsehood and lies far from me. That's the first thing. The second, give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God. So being rich brings the temptation of greed and always wanting more and losing touch with the fact that ultimately God is the one who's given you all the blessings in your life. And you can start to feel puffed up like you've made it, you've acquired the wealth, you're smart, you're great, you have all of this. Who needs God? Meanwhile, on the other end of the spectrum, when you have nothing, you can feel like God's forgotten about you. And so you've got to do whatever you've got to do to make sure that you take care of yourself, whether that be steal, cheat, lie, whatever it is. And so the prayer is, just give me contentment in the middle. We have to recognize being extremely wealthy is not a great easy gift. Being extremely poor is not a great gift. The two extremes that people try to say Christians should live on are not the places where we want to find ourselves. Satisfaction and contentment are most readily found in the middle, in balance. Second point today, the rich and the poor are more alike than they think. Proverbs 22, verse 2 says, rich and poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of all of them. Often, wealthy people look down on the poor. Well, if they just worked harder, if they just picked themselves up by the bootstraps, if they just didn't waste all their money, if they just didn't, and they're like, this is kind of their fault. And wealthy people can look down on those who are poor. And this verse reminds us, the Lord is the maker of us all. Rich or poor, we all have value and are made in the image of God. That poor person, yeah, maybe they did make poor choices. We don't know why, but that doesn't mean that they don't have dignity. It doesn't mean that God doesn't see them and value them and love them and want more for them. That God doesn't maybe want you to help. The flip verse that I think is just written a little differently, and it puts the emphasis on the poor's view of the rich. The poor and the oppressor have this in common. The Lord gives sight to the eyes of both. It's easy for poor people to look at the rich, and it's not the poor and the rich, it's the poor and the oppressor. To the person who's down and out, that person who's got it all, they're the oppressor, they're the man, they're the one who's keeping me down, they're the reason that I can't seem to get my feet out from underneath me. And again, from that perspective, you can dehumanize those who have more money than you and just be mad at them, see them as the enemy, see them as evil. And this verse is reminding us that ultimately, God is at work in all of our lives the same. People are people. We live in a society right now that is getting further and further driven. The rich and the poor are at odds with one another. They look down on one another. And Proverbs is trying to say, look, stop building this artificial divide. God is the maker of us all. God values us all. We're all in this together. We have a lot more in common than we think. We need to stop being a part of our nation dividing along socioeconomic lines where the rich and the poor can't even speak to one another, but recognize we are in this together. We have a lot in common. Number three, don't worry about keeping up with the Joneses. You've all heard that before, but it even goes back to Proverbs. It's really a basic cliche. All my buddies, I'm back to the truck analogy. I hear about trucks all the time in youth group, all the time. All my buddies have a truck, so I've got to have a truck. In middle age, it's, but they all take vacations. And so we need to take a vacation. I hear of couples arguing like, but we don't have money for a vacation. And one of the spouses is like, but all my friends take a family vacation. Our kids have to have a family vacation. Social media has made this competition of keeping up with others such a more amplified issue today because you see what others are doing. And you think, well, if they can do that, then we should do that. And so you try to keep up and you're like, I don't know how they afford it, but if they can afford it, then we can afford it too. And meanwhile, the bank is like, this is great. You can all afford it and I'll pay for it. And you can pay me back over years and years, tons of extra interest on that. The verses for this point, Proverbs 12, verse 9, better to be a nobody and yet have a servant than pretend to be somebody and have no food. Or verse chapter 13, verse 7, one person pretends to be rich, yet has nothing. Another pretends to be poor, yet has great wealth. What you see is not what you get. When you're keeping up with the Joneses might be pretending that they can afford it all. And meanwhile, they're a step away from bankruptcy. And you're trying to keep up with somebody and you have no idea that that spending lifestyle is leading you off a cliff. Have more sense than that. Don't worry what other people are doing. Worry about managing your finances and being a good steward of what God has brought you. Stop trying to have what other people have. Stop trying to pretend that you have what other people are pretending that they have. And instead, just live contentedly with what you're able to afford and the lot that God has brought to you. Our fourth principle on money, you can't outgive God. Everything you receive comes from God, and He wants to teach you to trust Him. So He calls every one of us to follow His example and to be generous in giving to Him and to others. That's what we're called to do, to be generous, open-handed people, to recognize when God gives us a paycheck, a portion of that paycheck isn't even ours, it's God's. And so we give it back to Him in tithes, into the church and offerings into the church. And a portion of that is to help those in need all around us. God is generous with us. He calls us to be generous with others. But it's more than just the calling to be generous. He then promises to bless us. In these Proverbs, like chapter 3, verses 9 through 10, it says, "Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing and your vats will brim over with new wine." Or chapter 11, verse 24, "One person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty." God is challenging you to be generous. And he's saying, if you do that, I will give you even more. I will generously overflow your barns. As you open your hands and give to those in need, God, in these Proverbs, says he will give to us. Now, a reminder, these are not promises. So it doesn't mean, okay, I need $200, so I'm going to donate $100 somewhere because then I know God will give me my $100 back and another $100, and then I'll get my $200. Like, it's not a promise. We don't play math games with God like that. But it is a principle where God says, those who are generous and trust me, I'm going to give so much more to them. Some of you have maybe never tested God in that matter. Maybe you've always felt like you simply don't have enough and you're waiting to make a few more dollars before you can be generous. As long as you withhold generosity, Proverbs 11:24 says, "Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty." As long as you keep clenched fists, the principle is you will always be poor. You will never have enough. God calls us to be generous so that he can open up his generosity and bless us in return. Fifth principle, wisdom and diligence build wealth. There are a million books. When I was a young man, I read many of them about how to get rich quick. If you just sell this product online, it's super easy. It's 2 hours a week, and you can make $3,000 a week in passive income. And if you just invest in these penny stocks, don't worry. They have nowhere to go but up. It's only 6 cents. No, 6 cents can go to zero, and your $1,000 invested can go to $0. We want to get to wealth quickly. Everybody through all of humanity has wanted a lot for a little. We want a big gain for a little bit of effort put forth. That is not how money and wealth works. God tells us, work hard, slow and steady, save, invest in good, safe things, and slowly acquire, and then you will have the wealth that you desire. Be wise in what you do, where you spend your money, where you invest your money. Then you will have wealth. Proverbs 6, verses 6 through 8. It's actually a little longer illustration about ants, of all things. It says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard, a lazy person. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest." The ant is always working. The ant is always storing up. In the summer, it's making sure that it puts a bunch of food away so that in the winter, it's able to eat. In the same way, we need to be wise in understanding you've got to work hard to save up so that when you have struggles, you have something in reserve. Proverbs 21, verse 20. "The wise store up choice food and olive oil, but fools gulp theirs down. This is talking about spending. The wise save, fools just spend. They consume right away on themselves. As soon as you get a paycheck that's a little bit bigger, you work some extra hours, some people see it and go, "That paycheck's $300 bigger. That's perfect. I had a $300 thing I wanted to buy." The wise person says, "That paycheck's $300 bigger. I can grow my savings account $300 more for a rainy day." The fools instantly consume everything. Wise are willing to store up. Proverbs 13, verse 11, "Dishonest money dwindles away, but whoever gathers money little by little makes it grow. Like, this isn't a fun, exciting point for anybody. We know this, but so often people want to take shortcuts. If you feel tempted to take a shortcut, if you hear something and you're like, hey, if I invest $1,000 today, I'm going to have $10,000 a year from now, it's probably not a godly investment. It's probably not a wise investment, and you should do your homework. The Bible is trying to protect you and say, if something sounds good, too good to be true, it is. Slow and steady, saving away, storing up, not consuming everything that you make. That's the secret to wealth. That is wisely living within an economy where money is earned and saved. Number six, this is obvious. Having money is better than not. At least Proverbs is honest. Chapter 10, verse 15 says, the wealth of the rich is their fortified city, but poverty is the ruin of the poor. Or 14, verse 20 says, the poor are shunned even by their neighbors, but the rich have so many friends. So people who have a balanced account have financial protection when things come. That's what the fortified city is kind of talking about. When something happens to you and you have a couple $1,000s in savings account, in a rainy day fund, or in what you call maybe a safety net account, you can deal with that repair to your car and keep going and get to work. But poor people who don't have anything in savings, when they have one little blip that disrupts how they're living from paycheck to paycheck, all of a sudden things fall apart. They can't pay rent. They get kicked out of the apartment and they find themselves having to couch surf. Like, it's just easier if you've got some money saved up. And so that's why we're encouraged to save up some money to have that safety net. The poor are shunned even by their neighbors. We don't want to say that this is the case and this is, you know, how life is supposed to be, but this is just life. When you live in poverty, people treat you differently. And so God is saying, be wise, be diligent, work hard. Don't allow yourself to fall into that position, because it is very, very hard to get out of it once you're there. It is easier to have money than to not. So while you're young, start being wise and choosing to store money back, because you never know when you're going to need it. However, verse 7 is a contrast to that. Money can't guarantee your security. Just because you have money doesn't mean that your life is going to be easy and perfect. No matter how hard you work, if you only put your trust in your money and not in God, you're in trouble. Proverbs 11:28 says, those who trust in their riches will fall, but the righteous will thrive like a green leaf. At the end of the day, our life comes down to our relationship with God, our righteousness, and our faith. It doesn't come down to how much money you have in the bank. Job is a perfect example of this principle. He was wealthy until in one single day he wasn't, and he lost everything. His wealth vanished, but his relationship with God was never diminished. His security was in his faith and not in his fortune. And so, yes, money does protect you from the inevitable ups and downs and challenges of life. However, it is not fail-safe. Ultimately, your faith is the only thing that will foolproof your life and get you through anything that comes your way. The eighth principle about money: the Lord hates those who get rich by injustice. Proverbs has a lot to say about living a life of integrity, and many examples have to do with ethical business dealings. And while we're going to talk about honesty and integrity in a future week, we need to recognize that your path to building wealth should never be by cheating another person. Proverbs 21:6 says, a fortune made by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor and a deadly snare. there's another verse I didn't put in there, but the person, you know, in a business dealing is like, oh, this is terrible, this is awful, this isn't worth anything. But you know in your mind it has a lot more value, but you're basically lying to try to get the price lower so that they're like, oh, fine, you can have it for $5, so that you can turn around and put it on eBay and sell it for $600. That is not wisdom. That is cheating somebody. That is a lying tongue that's trying to make somebody think that something they have is not valuable when you know the opposite is true. That is not an ethical business dealing. That is not how God wants you to acquire wealth. In anything you're buying or selling, to be operating in a way that is unfair to or dishonest to another individual is always off limits. Doing your taxes and just shading something down a little bit because, you know, the man doesn't need my money. You know, I already pay so much in taxes. That is not right for Christians. We do not acquire greater wealth by getting out of, even if you deem this is too much or I don't think it's fair, my tax bill is too high, then vote differently and hope that the tax rate changes, but you don't have the right to fill out your taxes in a dishonest way, knowingly that you're doing it so that you pay less, okay? Dishonest gain is not what God has for us. Additionally, in Proverbs 22:16, one who oppresses the poor to increase his wealth and one who gives gifts to the rich both come to poverty. Taking advantage of the poor, it's easy. They don't have the ability to push back. So telling somebody who's poor, well, I'll give you $5 an hour to do this when you know you couldn't get anybody else to do it for $15 an hour. Like, is that being fair? Or are you oppressing? Buying from a company that you know uses sweatshop labor, that you have, like you've seen in the news, the reason their clothes are so cheap is because they are paying people absolutely nothing. For me, personally, it gives me pause, and I'm willing to pay a little bit more for a piece of clothing that I know is not taking advantage of the poor. As Christians, these things matter. It actually drives our ethics and how we spend our money. We shouldn't be doing things to save a buck. I once found out I'm cheap. A lot of people, if you know me, you know that. I'm really cheap. My wife's like, yep, true story. I was looking for tools, and I'm like, I don't want to spend $200 on a DeWalt tool. Well, I went on eBay and I found it for $80 in the box. And I was like, this is incredible. I'm going to buy it for $80. And then I read about how people are stealing packages on people's porches through Amazon. And then they go and they resell it for a really low price below what any store would ever be able to sell that product. Like some of these manufactured goods, they have a minimum price and they can't sell for less than that. If you're buying products on Amazon and it's way less, you're probably buying stolen goods. Once I realized that, I was sad because I'd bought a couple of things for less than 50% of what its normal price is. But I thought to myself, all I'm doing is supporting this practice. I'm saving a buck, but at whose dollar, right? We have to think about these things. How we use our money, we have to do it in ethical ways. I have another point on this. I'm going to keep going. This is not saying every time you pass a beggar on the street. No, sorry, I'm back a point. We're on point 9 now. Perfect. Point 9. The Lord loves those who are generous to the poor. Jesus said, we will always have the poor among us. In life, there will always be some rich, some poor, and the bulk of us in the middle. But through God's abundance as a society, we have all that we need to meet everyone's needs. God gives freely, so he expects us to be willing to give to those in need around us. Proverbs 14:21 says, it is a sin to despise one's neighbor, but blessed is the one who is kind to the needy. Proverbs 14:31, whoever oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker, but whoever is kind to the needy honors God. So you see, how you bless those in need directly honors God. We are called, if God has blessed us and we see people in need, we are to step in and help. Here's the spot I was about to derail. This does not mean that every time you pass somebody on the street with a sad sign that Ryan just said, you have to roll down your window and give them money. There are a lot of scams out there. When we lived in Seattle, they actually had like a big push that said, stop giving to panhandlers because there's so many scams. Instead, what Michelle and I did is we found organizations that we knew had ways to give to those in need and that were trying to take steps to make sure that they weren't being taken advantage of. But we wanted to be generous to the poor, but we also wanted to be wise and not be taken advantage of. And so I encourage you, figure out how you can do that. Say, you know what? I want to be generous, and I'm going to figure out a way that suits me, that I'm comfortable with. I know other people who say, you know what? Every time I see somebody with a need, I want to give to them. And I just say, God, I trust that dollar or that $5 or $10 is in your hands, work in their life. However you feel like you want to do it, do that. That's between you and God. What is the call to all of us is be generous to people in need. Don't put your nose down at them and be like, well, they put themselves in that position and that's their own fault and I'm out and I'm never willing to help them so that I have more. It's all about the heart. Are you willing to help those in need? And I do understand there are times where maybe a boundary has to be put up because you have a family member who's always putting themselves in that situation and you've already helped them five other times and they need $1,000 one more time. Don't hear me saying you always have to give. There is a point where boundaries are important for people to learn their lessons and to be able to step out of their mess. Trust God, pray about it. It's all about have a heart that's willing to give and meet the need when you feel like that's a need that God's calling you to give to. Final point, money isn't everything. Ultimately, money will not fully satisfy. It is simply a tool for us to exist in a world with lots of other people. Proverbs 23, verse 4 and 5 says, do not wear yourself out to get rich. Do not trust your own cleverness. Cast but a glance at riches and they are gone. For they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. He who dies with the most toys still dies. We've heard that phrase. Like, it doesn't matter how much you have. Have enough to be content. Have enough to live, to be a blessing to others. But money isn't the be-all and end-all of your success. Don't build a life chasing riches, because at the end of your life, you'll realize you probably have a lot of regrets of things you missed out on so that you could have a slightly bigger bank account that you leave to your children. Many, many people have chased money, houses, vacations, fancy cars, you name it. And at the end of their lives, they realize that money can't buy happiness. We do that through relationship with Jesus Christ, through relationship with others, through love and service and just living the life that God has called us to live. And that is not putting money as the priority in our lives. So I know I've just covered a ton of concepts. We've gone through a whole bunch of verses. But if we truly want to know what Proverbs teaches about money, I couldn't have just come up here and put three or four verses on the screens because it's such a big overarching concept. We have to see it in all of its corners, and we have to realize that there's actually a lot of tension between these principles. For instance, you'll probably acquire more money if you work hard and are full of wisdom. But if all you care about is working hard to acquire more money, then you are a giant fool. Money is a blessing from God, but you'll be even more blessed if you give it away. God gives you money because He is generous, but He is generous with you so that you can be generous with others. And if you're generous with your money, then God will be more generous with you, and it creates a cycle. It is wise to save money, and yet there's a tension in knowing your money is never actually your truest security. Wealth is more desirable than poverty, but it's not as good as righteousness, humility, wisdom, good relationships with God and with others. So we've got tension in all this, and that's why I called this sermon having a balanced account, because we don't want to just run to one end or another end or try to get money quickly or say that money doesn't matter or be really lazy. We need to find a way to have a healthy relationship with money so that we can have what we need and be a blessing to others. So here are some tangible changes I encourage you to consider making after today. First, consider practicing generosity as a spiritual discipline. Maybe you don't have a generous donation built in to your monthly budget, but say, you know what? Rather than just waiting, I'm going to build this into my budget. I'm going to give $20 a month or $50 a month or $100 a month to a food pantry or a cause that I know is making a difference in helping those in need. And I'm going to budget it in first and not just say, well, maybe I'll get around to it. Maybe it'll happen. Build it in as a spiritual discipline, because what it does is it says, God, I trust you with my finances, and I know that I can give this, and I'll still be just fine. Second, build wealth through patient, honest work rather than shortcuts. If you're listening to this message and you're like, I would like to have some wealth, but I have none. Look, there's no quick way to it. It's saying, I want to get a job where I can work 40 hours a week or maybe more than 40 hours a week, and I consistently do it week in and week out, and I'm going to spend less and I'm going to save up money. That's how you grow wealth. That's how you have the ability to be generous with other people. First, you being diligent and wise with what God trusts you with. And thirdly, cultivate contentment and resist lifestyle inflation. Those of us who are a little further along in life, when you're in your 20s and you're able to go out to eat once a week, you're like, man, I am living the good life. I'm able to buy real clothes at Kohl's and I don't even have to rely on hand-me-downs. And then you make a little bit more money and you start buying at different stores where a pair of jeans costs more than 20 bucks. Maybe they're $40. And you're like, wow, I've come into it. I can buy the nice clothes now. And the more you make, it seems like the more everything costs, because you just keep building your lifestyle to match your income. And that's a challenge I've seen numerous pastors make. Different books have talked about it. Like, recognize, where is enough enough? And you just say, I have enough, and right now God has blessed us beyond that, and I'm going to use the rest of this to be generous, to be a blessing to others. So stop consuming everything that I'm making, but instead say, if this was good enough for me 10 years ago, why can't it still be good enough for me today? And now all this extra, I want to be a blessing because God has been so generous with my life. Ultimately, your relationship with money is a mirror that reflects the condition of your heart. Every financial decision you make, whether to save or spend, give or keep, work honestly or cut corners, it all reveals what you truly believe about God's character and his promises. The question isn't whether you have a lot of money or a little. The question is, does your handling of money demonstrate that you believe God is trustworthy? Whether you have a lot or a little, would God look at how you manage the money and say, no, you clearly trust me? Or would he say, you're hoarding, you're spending, you're being foolish, you're not willing to give to anybody or anything? When you work with integrity instead of taking shortcuts, you're affirming that God's way leads to true prosperity. When you find contentment rather than constantly wanting more, you're acknowledging that God himself is your ultimate treasure and not more of your stuff. This is why Proverbs spends so much time on money, not because wealth is the goal, but because how we handle money exposes if we are living by faith or by fear, by wisdom or by foolishness, by trust or by anxiety. So let me leave you with this challenge. Take an honest look at your financial habits this week. And do they reveal that you trust God? Do they reveal that you are finding contentment with what he's given to you? and you're willing to share with others in need? Are you living with the balanced account that Proverbs teaches, or are you chasing after greedy gain? Remember, God didn't give us money to test our greed. He gave us money to test our faith. And when you manage it His way, you will discover that the God who owns the cattle on a thousand hills truly can be trusted. Will you bow your heads with me as we pray?